Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration, collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Trevor Cameron, and as you'll see, I wanted to call him Gabriel Dumont several times throughout the interview. In fact, at one point, I do actually call him that. And we are talking about a new film coming out very soon at Imaginative, the film festival. Check that out online. The film festival happens the 20th to the 25th of October 2020, and Shadow of Dumont, I think, is playing on the 21st. There's going to be a live Q&A, and if you haven't guessed it yet, it's about Gabriel Dumont, and Trevor is related. His grandfather's father, I believe. Did I get that right, Trevor? I hope I did. But it's about Gabriel Dumont. It's a road film. It's fun. It's funny. It's entertaining. There's so much to learn. I mean, it's so funny that Trevor says in the interview that's going to follow just in a minute or two, you know, he didn't really think it was going to be educational, but it really is. And it really made me go back to a time many, many years ago when I would think I was in middle school in Toronto and wondering, when did I learn about that rebellion and Gabriel Dumont and all the others that were connected to it? This is a film, a conversation. It's about land rights. It's about ex-buffalo hunters. It's about Gabriel being a political leader and about standing up, you know, for your rights. And it's about legacy. It's about mothers. We talk about mothers a great deal and how connected they are to our, well, it seems silly to say it, but connected to our roots, but about how history resides in our mothers. This is about radical hope. We get into this idea of living history and what really matters. We talk about so many things, and you're gonna hear how much fun Trevor had making this film, and how much fun I had watching it. So check it out. It's like I said, it's coming up soon. Imaginative, the film festival, and you will get to see it there. Don't touch that dial. And if you want to learn a little bit more about what I'm doing, facetofacelive.ca, davidpecklive.com, you can find out more information there. You can advertise with us, banners in the newsletter. We've got a quite a good following now, and the message is getting out there. So please help us to continue to do that, and please leave a review if you like what we're doing here. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, a review on iTunes or Spotify, a thumbs up on YouTube if you're listening to the interview there would be a huge help. It really does go a long way. And like I said, you can advertise with us on the site and in the podcast and even in the newsletters as well. And I guess that's about it you know, an introduction. You're going to enjoy the conversation I'm coming up with Trevor, and we even get into, check this out, capital, how capital and representation are essential, and how connected they really are, and how you need to work at keeping a democracy, and why the issues that we're facing, folks like Gabriel Dumont, are still some of the same issues that we're facing today. So coming right up, Trevor Cameron talking about his new film, Shadow of Dumont. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today. Someone, I think, can I say this, masquerading as Gabriel Dumont. We have Trevor Cameron here with us to talk about his new film, Shadow of Dumont. And we are live. We're sort of face to face. Trevor, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, virtual face to virtual face, huh?
It's a peculiar thing. And some of the calls that I'm doing these days, I'm doing on Zoom. And so you actually do get a face, but it's still kind of weird, right? You know,
yeah,
it's still
having to wear a shirt.
Oh. That's right. Having to be fully clothed, maybe showered, and you probably have to brush your hair. In your case, you'd have to brush your hair. That's in my case, not so much. Not so much in my case. Well, listen, man, thanks for taking the time today to talk about your new film. And it's premiering at Imaginative, which is coming up in a couple of days, October 20 to 25. And I believe the film is downloadable there during the festival. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that as well. And we'll certainly call back to that later in the interview.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We are actually on the 21st. October 21st is the opening for Shadow of Dumont. And when you order it to stream, you don't have to watch it right away. You have 48 hours. So you can kind of wait till after work or whatever it is, and you can watch it within 48 hours. We're also doing a live Q&A at 3 p.m. Nice. Eastern Standard Time.
Well, I'm going to do my best to get the word on the street about this. I need to tell you before we step in, and I want to, I think that I want to hear about you being a storyteller, and I think you said in the film clown. I need to hear more about that. But it sounds like you've got a ton of experience in comedy, and it certainly comes out in the film as well, just the way you piece it together and the music and all of the above. So, and by the way, congratulations. I love the road trip.
Thanks.
I mean, I learned a ton. And it's just, there's just so much more going on than meets the eye, isn't there? I mean, everywhere you look and every person you meet.
Yeah, that was kind of the point, was to take the history and make it our own, you know, instead of having to call the university and talk to the professor. I thought, you know, all of this research, it's all available online now. And so I did a lot of that. And the idea of the documentary was being able to go to these places instead of just reading about them, actually traveling so you could see what remains of the time and what is the lasting legacy. And
is it even fair to call it these days the Upper Canada Rebellion? Is that
I mean, you know, it's, you know, there's a few schools of thought, you know, around uprising, rebellion, war. You know, at the end of the day, it was a group of ex-buffalo hunters who really wanted to have representational government, you know, and
Well, I love the fact, and we're already into it here, and but which is wonderful, by the way. But I love that Gabriel Dumont is referred to as a politician. You know, some places, a politician with a really big beard and a rifle. Yeah. You know,
and you know he was elected president back in of his community before the uprising.
So Trevor, before we dive in, I want to say, as a kid, and I was asking my kids are 15 and 13 and grade 8 and grade 10. And I was saying, hey, are you guys talking about Real? What's happening? I mean, I'm talking to this guy later today about Gabriel Dumont. And so I remember, I'm not sure where Gabriel and Louis Real and so on fits in the curriculum currently in Ontario or Canada. I would imagine, you know, they're different in some cases. When it happened for me, it was around grade 6, which is quite a while ago for me, quite a few years ago. But the impact, seriously, the impact. And I remember writing a paper on it as a kid, if I can call it a paper. I wasn't much of an academic back then. But the story of Louis Real and Gabriel Dumont really had an impact on me. These guys pushing back. There was this sense of, even as a kid, I remember this sense of injustice. And I hope that's because of the way the teacher portrayed it. But maybe it was just some of the images that I saw and some of the stories that you reminded me of today so beautifully, or when I watched the film and I was imagining through our conversation. But there was something that just was so not right about this. And that's why I asked you about the Upper Canada Rebellion, because rebellion sort of presupposes they were doing something wrong. You know what I mean? And I'm, yeah, anyway, I well, just wanted to.
Well, it also presupposes a lot of what Canada is or was at
of course,
the time.
Of course.
It's funny that you talk about where they fit in the curriculum, because that was always my argument around it. Usually it's, you know, 3 days worth of this uprising and then they hurry off to do the last spike. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's the completion of the railway and then
sure.
on with the rest of Canada.
Right. Just a little footnote.
Yeah, exactly.
When in actual fact, this there again, so much more going on in the meets. Yeah. Okay, so we've got so much to talk about. It's crazy. I love these interviews where I know going in, we're never going to have enough time. You're a storyteller. You're a clown. You dress up as the part, which I so love. I got to say, one of my favorite lines in the film is, I'm not going to lie, I kind of want the rifle now. I mean, that's one of my favorite
I still
moments.
Do.
I bet you do, yeah.
I was talking to my brother. He owns two.
Oh, very fair? Cool. That's not fair at all.
It's not fair at all.
Talk about injustice. Yeah. Tell us about your background. Tell us about why the heck you decided to go on this road trip and who your great uncle was.
Yeah, that's the one. I usually put it into perspective because, you know, when you put three greats in front of something, it sounds really old. And, you know, like I always consider it as my grandfather's grandfather.
Okay, got it.
You know what I mean? My grandfather's grandfather was Isidore Dumont. And that was Gabriel Dumont's brother. And he was the first one shot and killed in Duck Lake. So I use that as my way to get into the story, to kind of give myself an idea of where I fit. So it's not that far away. When you say great-great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-uncle, you know, the mind doesn't get how far away it is. But when you say grandfather's grandfather, you're like, oh, okay, I get that.
That's not so far away.
Yeah. Yeah. That's living memory, you know?
So you say out of the gate in the film, you're a Métis, you're a father, you own a three-legged cat, you were a storyteller and a clown, and you used to do comedy for crying out loud. Tell us a bit about you. I'd love to hear more. And I think my listeners would too.
Well, I mean, I don't want to go too far back in time, but there was a time where I was absolutely convinced that I was going to become a great improviser, and I'm a pretty good improviser, but that's not necessarily a career path, I realized quite quickly.
Is it not what real men do? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I mean, you know, it's harder to put bacon in the fridge if you become a full-time improviser. So I started trying to be as open as I could be to any challenge. You know what I mean?
Nice. So,
you know, I'm using my improviser background, I transitioned into stand up, and all the while I was writing, you know, I was screenwriting, you know, not really selling anything, but constantly staying active.
Sure.
And, I got a break in, going to Saskatchewan to work on a kid show. And then I suddenly started writing. And I was still improvising and doing stand-up comedy, but the writing became something that was feeding me more. And it soon overtook it. So, I mean, I didn't, you know, drop it or, you know, throw away this idea of comedy and improv. I just put it away and, you know, started writing. And the more I wrote and started getting into directing, the more I realized that the things I learned as an improviser really helped serve story and tell
absolutely
tell make stories.
You a better I would imagine you'll look back, and if you don't already, it's going to make you a better storyteller or a more interesting storyteller, maybe a funnier storyteller, right?
The idea in the documentary was to constantly stay open to adventure, you know, like, you know, we went on this trip and we had really vague ideas on where we were going and who we were going to speak to. But, you know, there was a lot of times where we had no idea who we were going to talk to. We had no idea if we were going to get into a, you know, this museum or
funny,
you know, when we went to Big Sandy, I had no plan. And this was Big Sandy, Montana. You know, I had done zero research. I just knew that there was a funny news story. So I wanted to do something there. And it was just by luck, the Historical Society was open and let us interview.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, I've interviewed a lot of documentarians over the years, and so many of them say things like, well, the film writes itself, and it's not like you sit down and you write a screenplay. You have ideas, you have approaches, you have places and you want to go and people you want to meet and so on, and things, you know, you discover things along the way, right? And so in some ways, I would imagine, it, you know, for most would say it makes it a better film, right?
Well, I mean, I hope so. I mean, I tried to write it. I tried. I was, you know, doing all of this mental gymnastics, trying to imagine what would happen when you get there and start improvising. And don't get me wrong, it was an important step to kind of at least, you know, give yourself an idea of what you were going to do. You knew it wasn't what you were going to do, but at least going in with the wrong plan at least gives you something, you know, versus just literally going in with nothing.
You know, I don't know if you heard me, but I actually called you Gabriel earlier in the interview. I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and, sorry about that.
It's fantastic. I think it's amazing that I don't know. It made me sort of want to step into the road trip with you. And I love the old van, by the way. It's hysterical.
Oh, it's amazing.
And what a beautiful piece on the side. It's just, it's perfect, right? It's just perfect for you and your character and all of that. And but the fact that I called you that, and while I think I told you before we started recording, as I was thinking about this interview today, I kept referring to you in my mind as Gabriel. I mean, that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's...
You pulled it off, Trevor. I mean, you know what I mean? It's amazing. It's so cool.
As I was saying, I was really trying to get into people's subconscious.
Yes.
You know, my producers thought that I wanted to get the costume or get the outfit because I was going to do reenactments. And it was like, no, this is just because I think it would be funny and it would put people at ease to be willing to talk about Gabriel Dumont to someone who looks vaguely like Gabriel Dumont. To me, it made me laugh. So I was like, well,
yeah,
that's my audience right now while I'm shooting this documentary. It was kind of, well, if it makes me laugh, I'm going to do it.
Right, right, right. That's the clearly the comic and the improviser coming out in you. Gilbert Baldhead said he was a protector of the Métis people. And I loved how there was this little pause and then he says, you need that.
Yeah.
I just thought that was really beautiful. Can you talk about him? I mean, and maybe in comparison or alongside of Riel, or did you consciously leave Riel out of this film? Really?
I consciously did. It was not, it was not by accident. It was, I wanted to tell the story of Gabriel Dumont as I saw him. Or as I saw his legacy.
And sure. Yep.
As it grew, as the documentary grew, it became less about just my legacy and it became kind of what everyone else thinks as well. But every side, you know, I just kept calling them side missions. You know, people would ask me, well, don't you want to take a look at this? This has, you know, like it's all about Riel. Or it's all about, you know, the Big Bear, or you know what I mean. And it was all of these other missions that, if I was doing a documentary about 1885, would be great.
Right, right.
But the entire point of the documentary was to say that those 2.5 months are not his story. He has a whole rich background before the uprising
and after
this rich time afterwards. And everyone knows, you know, in grade 8 or grade 9, they get the 2-day kind of quick and dirty of what the uprising is in Canadians' eyes. I wanted to step past that and say, well, I really want to talk about the man.
Well, you know what's really cool to me, Trevor, is you start and kind of end, or at least close to the end, with the big family photo. Mm-hmm. And you talk about reclaiming your identity. I mean, this is a road trip for us, as viewers, but it really, I mean, you're with the guy right, driving the van and the holding the camera, et cetera, et cetera, at times, but it really became a road trip for you more so in some respects than just from a filmmaker's perspective.
Oh yeah. And I mean, you know, we were on the road in the Great Plains for probably about 30 days.
Okay.
And, you know, we racked up over 10,000 kilometers on the van.
It's a lot.
And, you know, even though you have a cameraman, you have a sound man, you have producers, you have like a tail van that follows as well. It's still this road trip. And, yeah, I did go through a lot of points where, you know, you start getting, more insular and, you know, you kind of forget that there's a crew.
Right. Well, isn't there that moment where you at the, is it at the Dumont Park or maybe at the statue where you say, I'm going to have to just take a few minutes here and you spread some tobacco.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
just that moment of memory.
Yeah. Just
at Batoche, maybe it was, you said,
I did do that at Batoche, but I also dropped some tobacco in, at the church where his in-laws are buried, where Madeline's parents are buried. I mean, you know, I am a clown, but at the same time, you know, you have to allow yourself to be affected by things. It's so easy to forget that you're allowed to have feelings if a camera's rolling, you know, and that are sincere, you know, and, you know, that's something that it's so easy to forget about. You get inside your own head and you start worrying about the schedule or,
of course, yeah,
you know, the next question you're going to be having to pose to someone. You know, it was nice to be able to just go, you know what, I'm just going to take a little bit of time.
Trevor, it would be very interesting to see what the film would have been like if you had not been the Métis filmmaker, but filming himself essentially, but a filmmaker doing a film about Gabriel Dumont. You know what I mean? Like, wow, the differences, right?
Yeah. And this was something that, that's where this research actually came from, right? I had originally envisioned when I was working on my last show, The Power Went Out. I was doing a show in India of all places. And The Power Went Out and it was, you know, 36 degrees out. It was stifling. And we were doing some animation. And so when the power goes out, there's just, you have nothing to do. And as the power was out, I realized that what I really, really wanted to do was tell Gabriel Dumont's story as epically as I could. And I ended up pitching the producers that day, you know, saying, look, this is what I want to do. I want to do the Métis Braveheart. I want to do this mini series. I want to do, and how I originally imagined it was an animation because I wanted to be able to include these languages and these looks that I knew would be so hard to find real actors for.
Right.
And so that was actually, when I got back to North America, I got more serious with my research, and that was what started this documentary, was the research to do this epic film, which I'm still going to do, of course, when I finally figure it out. But it was nice having all of this research and then, you know, being asked, well, you know, maybe we can look at it as a documentary. And I was able to go, yeah, totally. That would be fun. I can absolutely do that.
Well, I wish you well with that. That sounds amazing. The Métis Braveheart. Somebody in the film says, and I think it's Les, I think the historian says that it's the last major human rights issue in Canada.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Give us a bit more of that history, that injustice, and connect it to the protector Vrooman. Of the people.
That was Vrooman, who was a educator and professor in Montana, in Helena, And unfortunately, or you know, fortunately, depending on how you think about it, he actually had passed away about 4 or 5 weeks after we interviewed him.
Mm.
We drove down, we showed him the van, and I didn't know him from Adam. I had no idea who he was. I'd never spoken to him on the phone. I'd only known him as somebody who did a lot of research on the landless Indians of Montana. And there's two of them. There's Vrooman and I think that was who was saying it. Because there was also another elder in Manitoba as well that I was speaking with.
Right. You certainly meet a lot of people along the way.
And I was getting so worried because, we're losing these pockets of historians, right?
Right.
There was a few of them passing. But this idea of this being Canada's last I can't remember what did he call it? He called it a
human rights issue, essentially, right. Last major human rights issue for Canada.
Yeah, I mean, I think to many that is the perspective. I mean, I would say that there's still a lot of large human rights issues in Canada that still need to be kind of figured out.
Sure,
but I would say it's the latest settled one.
Right,
you know, it's this idea of land grabs and not treaty, but the idea of how people get swindled out of their land is something that's not discussed in Canada enough, and not acknowledged at all. Right. And this idea of everyone receiving script allowance, which was the how they got much of the land from the Métis. Once you delve into that, it becomes really problematic and difficult, and really easy for mainstream Canadians to turn the page on.
Right.
To go, okay, this is too big. And
well, I feel like sometimes, Trevor, that's exactly what people say, in so many different ways. You know, it's by implication. It might actually come out and say it. Well, hang on a minute. This was in the past. And okay, yes, we made a mess of it. Mm-hmm. They might even be willing to go there. But now how do we move on from here? But I feel like, well, hang on. I think that we need to understand things a little better. I think we need to listen a little more. Sure, we absolutely have to talk about things like reconciliation and recognition and memory and so on. But maybe, just maybe, we need more than that 2-day pray see that we got in grade 8.
You know, I think that, you know, that's a really good example. Pardon me. That's a really good example of how the conversation gets stopped, where you know, a Canadian goes, okay, you're right, we did it. That's the same way of just saying shut up.
You know what? I've actually never heard somebody say it that way before, but I think you're right. Or I'm too embarrassed to really talk about it.
Yeah.
Or I'll just acknowledge what to say. Yeah.
You know, it's all true. Can we move past it? And it's like, well, we can't move past it until you actually truly understand it. And
well, and that's what's so beautiful about, you know, Shadow of Dumont, because it helps us to understand it in a completely different context than I've certainly ever seen, and in a fun way too, which is kind of disarming, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was, by design. I really wanted to trick people into thinking about our history and owning it. There was something a discussion I had with one of the historians that I met on my travels. He kept talking about how the land was empty. This is an American historian. And he was saying, well, the land is empty, or was empty, before this fort was built. And then the fort was built. And then the land became full. And you know, there was so many parts of my brain that were just wanting to do a gotcha on him, you know, to say, well, no, you know, this was the Blackfeet Reserve before the fort was built, and
right.
The fort was built by the Métis tradespeople who came in and built it. And, you know, so how is something empty when it's a reserve and there was people there to help you build it? But instead of fighting and getting this gotcha, because I find that when you go through a conversation and look to just score points on someone, it just becomes, you know, why bother interviewing?
Well, right? It becomes pointless.
Yeah.
It really does, right?
So instead, once I realized, like, okay, well, he's not acknowledging the Aboriginal presence at the time, what I did was I just started talking to him about Gabriel Dumont's pool table.
Interesting.
And started talking about what Gabriel Dumont had in Batoche, you know, talking about his businesses, his pool table, his, you know, his nights of, you know, having beers and gambling and playing pool all night before he turned his back on all of that for this uprising. And the reason why I was telling him that was not because I wanted him to think about the pool table. Instead, I wanted him to recognize that the Métis are people.
Well, it's such a beautiful way to do it. I mean, and kudos to you. And that's clearly the comic, the storyteller, the real human being in you coming out and saying, okay, instead of putting up my dukes here,
right,
I'm going to tell a real human story, try to create some sort of empathetic connection with this guy and change the narrative, right?
And I hoped that the pool table would be the way to come in, to say, hey, you've played pool in your life, you know?
It's good.
And also it was about trying to keep these relationships.
You know, it's interesting, you know, I went back to my classroom and I'm going to do some digging and try to find out what grade I was in when I learned about this. See, just maybe my mom kept that copy of that paper that I wrote. Who knows? I highly doubt it. She's 86, but I highly doubt it. But I wonder, was it presented to me as a kid in my whatever, 10, 11 years old? This is 40 some years ago. Was Dumont demonized, you know,
right,
through the way that it was told? And maybe that's what really stuck with me. Or was it the fact that he was so humanized by I'm thinking it was a Mr. Wheeler, and if it was, right, he would have humanized the Métis for sure. And was it that I connected with? You know what I mean? I'm getting goosebumps. Wouldn't it be wonderful to know? You know, and anyway, just a little aside, but I think it's a really beautiful thing what you did there, and there's a lesson there for all of us.
Right.
Instead of, like you said, instead of scoring points, how about tell a story?
Yeah. Yeah. And if they get it or not is almost irrelevant.
They might get it later.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about approaching people through their subconscious.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of interviewing Michelle Latimer about her new film, Inconvenient Indian, and I've read Thomas King and Richard Wagamese and so on, and it's all about story, right?
Right.
And I think Wagamese says stories are meant to heal, and it may not happen in the moment, but you planted the seed.
Right.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's so lovely.
You know, your mom probably does have that, by the way.
I hope she does.
My mom had passed away 2 years ago.
Okay.
Just, you know, the year before I started doing this this documentary, and my sister was going through her things, and that's where she found my old book report.
That's what it was.
My mom had put it away.
Maybe I did a book report. Oh, that's wonderful. That's very sweet. Hey, listen, we're sort of coming near to the end of this interview. And I honestly, Trevor, I think I almost called you Gabriel again. I think we could chat all day on this. We really could. But tell me a little bit about this legacy, you know, worth fighting for. And you kind of wrap up the film by talking about reclaiming your sense of identity. And I think Radical Hope, which is just, again, isn't that what all of this is about?
Oh, yeah. That was my big light bulb moment in speaking with Nick Vrooman. And he got it right away. You know, when he said, "You're traveling with Radical Hope," it was like, well, yeah, I didn't realize it when I started, but yeah, it was all about, I hope this works because I have no backup plan. You know, this is, you'll either get it or I'll end up having to, you know, put a lot of black and white photos and
right,
a good voice actor.
Right. Whole lot more animation in the film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when we talk about legacies, I think that was the other big come away that I had, was realizing just how much of Gabriel Dumont's life was in the States, was in the Dakota Territories.
We haven't even talked about Buffalo Bill yet.
And yeah, I mean, you know, it was a whole other life for Gabriel Dumont, right?
He basically joined a circus, right?
Yeah, he was offered a position in the Wild West show. And I mean, he was, there's a lot of talk about what he did, because when you look at these old films that were made, they always had him, you know, shooting his rifle and blowing up glass bulbs and riding his horse. He could do all of those things, but he was hired at the Wild West show to be living history. He was hired not because of his amazing horse riding or his ability to shoot.
Or his wonderful beard.
Yeah, it was not his beard. It was, he was part of history. And, you know, you're looking at a time before radio, before television, you know, barely print. And this is how people would get their history. And, you know, so much of his life in the States is not thought of. It's not that it's unknown.
Right.
But it's just, it's really easy to fence him into Saskatchewan, in Saskatchewan history.
It's so funny when you mention, and I think this is what's so beautiful and wonderful about your film, and it is, it's going to peel back some layers for people. People are going to dig, they are going to read more books and go deeper and find out exactly, you know, or at least according to some historians, what happened. And I think that's a beautiful and a wonderful thing. But I was just thinking about, you know, when you said there was no social media and this is how people got their history, in a sense. I wonder what the hashtags would have been like.
Yeah.
You know, what would they have been taking photos of for Instagram?
I wish I could remember that site. There's a Gabriel Dumont Twitter.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. Why doesn't that surprise me?
And what was great was the whoever was doing the Twitter was releasing stuff on the anniversary of the uprising. You know what I mean? So during the first day, he would have a tweet about the first day of Batoche. And they were all kind of memes and stuff like that. And yeah, it was great seeing that people are owning our history instead of, you know, being afraid of it.
Did you reclaim your identity?
Was it ever? Reclaim does, you know, it's not exactly true. I mean, I think when my mother had passed away, that was, as for so many people, right? That their history resides in their mother.
Mm.
And I found that whenever I was having crises of who I was, the answer was always talk to your mom. She'll know your history. She'll know the family history. And, you know, they can kind of steady you. And when she passed, I realized just how insulated I was from the Métis communities in Toronto, because I had never went to seek them out because I had my mom on the line.
Right.
So, you know, this definitely did help with, you know, for lack of better words, reclaiming my culture. It is more about kind of like, you know, introducing myself to the culture. Reintroducing.
Well, and I think you do it in a fun and a beautiful way. And what a wonderful thought, too, how history resides in our mothers. And also, too, just as on a note, ending our conversation, I forget who said it, but in the film, his issues are still the issues, that we're dealing with today. And I think that's a remarkable thing. 120 years later.
Yeah, we had really long conversation. That was Nick Vrooman again. And we started talking about the current American political climate and how he framed it was, in Gabriel Dumont's time, they had, a freedom and they had the ability to make money. They had, they were able to make capital, but they didn't have any representation and they had no way of, being able to represent themselves. They had no vote. And, that was clearly freedom and capitalism, but not democracy. And this idea that they're not the same thing. And he was talking about in today's time how people think that they're inextricably linked, but we've already shown, 150 years ago that they aren't. You really have to work at keeping a democracy. And you might think your freedom and your being able to trade things for money or, buy stuff makes you free, but it's not. It's not the same thing. And, it was a really interesting conversation that he brought up.
It's a fascinating way to end about connecting it to issues today, but also to issues for First Nations, Métis, and Inuit folk too, in Canada, but in North America, I guess. And it's also what I love about any great documentary. It's so layered. There's so much more going on than meets the eye. Trevor, and again, almost called you Gabriel. Thank you for your time today. What a pleasure. Tell us just before we wrap. So it's playing Shadow of Dumont is playing at Imaginative coming up on October 21st. You'll be able to download it there but stream it for about 5 days, right?
No, for 48 hours.
For 48 hours. Yeah. So, but it's on during the festival, correct?
Yeah, it's on the 21st.
Got it. Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Get that day pass or just get that movie pass. And there's also the Q&A.
And the Q&A as well.
3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Nice. Is there a website you can send us to or not yet?
Well, the easiest would just be to go to www.shadowofdumont.com.
Beautiful. And also Imaginative. Search that, folks, as it sounds, Imaginative, and you'll get to the website for the festival. Trevor, what a pleasure chatting with you today. Thanks for the film, the insights, the thoughts, and the fun. And maybe next time we can talk about the Gatling gun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all
wrong? What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.